ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, just about half an hour ago, the embargo lifted on what will be a major speech the Prime Minister will deliver at the Queensland Media Club in Brisbane tomorrow. Now, the speech provides a keen insight into the government's budget priorities. And it also sets out the government's direction for the next 12 months, laying the foundation for a second term agenda. The theme is a future made in Australia, and it will include a plan to funnel taxpayer-funded incentives towards advanced manufacturing and clean energy projects as Australia tries to stay competitive with overseas nations such as the US, where President Joe Biden is spending massively to up their manufacturing efforts. Joining us, Peter Martin, Business and Economy Editor with The Conversation Australia and visiting fellow at the Crawford School of Public Policy at the ANU. Hey, Peter's read the speech, digested its import, and is with us now to share it with us on the Nightlife News Breakdown. Peter, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening. I tell you what, it's quite something, this speech.
Really? Tell us, a future made in Australia. What are we making in Australia? We already make stuff in Australia, but what's this to?
That's not specified, Philip, but we need to be willing to break with old orthodoxies, to pull new levers to advance the national interest. It's a fundamental shift in the way nations are structuring their economies, a change every bit as significant as the Industrial Revolution.
Really? Okay.
So the Prime Minister says, you know, Philip, that, and I'm quoting, in the years following the Cold War, people spoke about the end of history. The benign assumption was that free trade would spread unchallenged goodwill. That's gone. Strategic competition is a fact of life, and I could go on. We don't know what this is. We do know it'll be, in fact, called a Future Made in Australia Act. I guess that's an acronym. You could work it out to be something. We don't know what the act will be. That's because what will be in it. But we do know that it'll spend and leverage, the money that others are spending, money in order to make Australia make things. Albanese's point, and this will be revealed in the budget, but and they're still working out the details, but Albanese's point is that this is happening in the US. He also said it's happening in Europe, in Korea, in Japan, in Canada. The idea of governments standing back, you know, as they did when they let the car industry fail and, you know, talk about the market, that's gone, over, no more.
Australia has been in the midst of these debates, of course, forever. You know, we talked about it during the car industry as that disappeared. We talked about it during the steel industry as that pretty much disappeared. There's still some. We talked about it before in manufacturing, you know, appliances, white goods, electronics, and so on, when all these goods were the rage. Why is it different this time round when we're talking about new technologies such as solar panels or renewable energy projects? Why is it different this time round?
Because the world has changed, and the Prime Minister's right, although I think his language is over-laboured. This is not old-fashioned protectionism. It's the new competition, he says. Things have changed. This is, in fact, owes a lot to COVID rather than to the energy transition. The idea of things being made in one country and consumed in another had real problems. In fact, that's probably, I think it was the main reason certainly we began to have the inflation we did, was as the world got started making things again, China was still locked down, and so the computer chips needed for everything, including cars, weren't being made. And Donald Trump sort of started this himself in the early years of COVID, massive spending to rebuild manufacturing in the US.
But what's different this time around, though? You say the world has changed. In what way? I mean, there's no Australian solar panel manufacturer that can manufacture solar panels in Australia cheaper than they can be imported from the from China. And indeed, when they're manufactured here, so-called manufactured here, they're using many imported components anyway. What's actually different this time around?
Look, I really don't know what the Prime Minister has in mind. Right. I know the vibe.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that they're going to be open for business with a one-stop shop. So in the past, if you wanted money for some kind of new industry you were going to create, you know, say it was making solar, you know, electric buses or hydrogen-powered buses or something here, you wouldn't, the default answer would be no. Now the default answer will be you go to this place and they'll do you a deal. They'll see what you can deal, do. This will cost money, although the government briefing about this makes the point that money isn't the main thing, because money is there. Super funds have got lots of money. Right now the super funds are investing overseas. We're a net investor, a net exporter of capital, the opposite to what it used to be, because there are better opportunities overseas. The idea is, I guess it's a bit like the old-fashioned state governments. If you were a shyster, if you were one of those and you went to a certain state that I won't name, but I was born there, it's in the centre of Australia, down in the south. If you went there and said, we want to set up a factory, or if you'd done that, we're considering pulling out our factory, they'd say, we can do you a deal. Do you want so much in payroll tax reduction? Do you want so much in something? I think Albanese wants Australia to act like that, which sounds ridiculous, except that that's what other countries are doing. And he says this is the new competition is the government acting, I suppose, entrepreneurially, you know, like lots of our state governments have.
Anyway, we shall await the Future Made in Australia Act when it appears. The federal government plans to give Australia's competition watchdog some stronger powers. With the ACCC's merger powers are to be strengthened. The ACCC will be given greater capacity to vet and block planned mergers. The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, outlined why the changes were necessary.
A voluntary system means the ACCC isn't properly equipped to detect and act against anti-competitive mergers. It has limited visibility of merger activity. It doesn't always see the ones that present the greatest risks to competition.
The chair of the ACCC, Gina Cass-Gottlieb, says the change in policy will bring Australia up to speed with a developed world.
The critical differences between our process and those in all bar three OECD nations are that we have a voluntary informal process. So there is no obligation to notify, and what we don't see, we can't review and we can't prevent.
Peter, this is big news, isn't it? It's touted as the biggest upheaval to merger laws in half a century. What's it going to mean?
It means that mergers will no longer take place in secret. Now, mergers are, you know, we think that when companies collude, that's a bad thing, okay? We certainly would think it was a bad thing if Coles and Woolworths got together and agreed on prices. Merging is the same thing. If they merge, they don't need to collude. They set the prices together. The ACCC, you know, rightly, is very critical of mergers, especially ones that make a company very big. In the past, mergers have taken place in secret. What happens is, as I said there, there's no requirement in Australia to let the authorities know you're planning to merge. And indeed, there's no statistics on it. Obviously, if it's a share market company, that's reported to the share market, but otherwise there's not. So what this will do is all companies more than a certain size and more than a certain concentration in the industry will have to seek pre-approval for plans. Now, the pre-approval will be quick. The ACCC will have to give them that approval. So they'll have to notify. It'll be on a register, published. The ACT will have to give them a yes or no within 30 days, otherwise it's regarded as approved. And there'll be previously it comes after companies after the event. This will mean things are more straightforward. It'll mean we know what's happening. Now, at the moment, there are about 330 objections a year, mergers examined, but the point is made by the Treasurer that we don't know if they're the right 330. They're probably not, because they're the ones that are reported to the ACCC. It wants to set the threshold high enough, so there'll still be about that many, but they will be ones with, on the face of it, a significant chance of doing harm. That's the idea anyway.
Mm. Yep. Speaking of power in the market, the interim report from the Independent Review into the Food and Grocery Code of Conduct, led by former Labor Minister Craig Emerson, was released this week. I mean, it recommends that supermarkets have to sign up for a mandatory code of conduct. It was voluntary before, although Bunnings has not been included. How is this going to make any difference whatsoever, do you think?
Well, the code of conduct applies to supermarkets.
That's right.
And the companies that provide them with things. And these are, the ones that they take advantage of are the growers.
That's right.
And you try and sell them fruit. And if they decide they don't want to buy it, they'll find a reason after they've agreed to buy it. You know, it's easy to say that fruit's no good, at least according to Four Corners, and they'll send it back and you'll have to bury it. It applies only to supermarkets. Now, the Horticulture Council of the Farmers Federation says, you know, Bunnings has a similar role. What do you think it would be with, Philip? Not fruit, obviously.
Timber.
No, although it could be a case.
Plants.
Ornamental pot plants. Ornamental pot flowers.
Pot plants, yes.
Go into Bunnings and turn right. That's what you see, right?
Hmm.
And they reckon that Bunnings is clearly the biggest single buyer of these in Australia. Bunnings says it only has a certain percent of the market, but even so, it's the biggest single buyer, and that it does the same sort of thing. Whether that's right or not, they say, look, if you're going to do it for supermarkets, do it for Bunnings. This whole thing, by the way, is reversing, Philip. So it's sort of, remember this began because we all thought supermarkets were ripping us off, were price gouging.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it is turning out, the more they investigate it, it's that they're ripping off their suppliers. And it may well be that as a result of this code of conduct and other things, we don't have as low prices, but we have farmers who are being well looked after. It's just odd the way it's turning out.
Yes. No, it is interesting. A bit back to the manufacturing argument we were starting at the beginning, that people will ultimately buy what they consider to be best value, and that's usually the cheapest. For what they're getting.
Oh, no. Wouldn't you like to buy solar panels made in the Hunter Valley?
Yeah, I would.
Wouldn't you pay more to do that?
I would, but how much more would you pay? That's the question, yeah. Look, there was a significant speech delivered by the Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, in which Penny Wong told a conference in Canberra last night that a federal government would look at recognising a Palestinian state, saying it would build momentum towards a two-state solution. She's also argued that it would undermine Hamas and improve diplomatic relations with other countries in the region. Here she is.
What is the path to peace? I don't see, ultimately, any security for Israel without the issue of Palestinian statehood being resolved.
Yeah, it's a change of direction, but it's a change of emphasis, particularly for the federal government. Other countries are considering this. In other words, recognising the Palestinians as a state rather than waiting for Israel and the Palestinians to come to an agreement on the matter. The opposition, though, has taken a different view. The Shadow Foreign Minister Simon Birmingham says it's, quote, very dangerous and very concerning for Australia to be considering recognising Palestine as a state while Hamas remains in Gaza. And he says it's a move that could be seen as rewarding terrorists.
It's a dangerous approach to be taking in terms of just 6 months after the October 7 attacks, suggesting that there is some almost outcome that Hamas and others would wish to see by providing a preemptive or fast-tracked recognition.
Yeah, well, the opposition leader, Peter Dutton, staked out territory here too. He says Penny Wong's comments are reckless, accusing the foreign minister of irreparably damaging relations with Israel through floating the potential recognition of a Palestinian state. Look, Peter, the plain fact is that the dial has shifted on Israel as a result of what's happened in Gaza, hasn't it? And a two-state solution's long been an Australian preferred position, certainly ALP policy. Has Penny Wong done anything other than give words to the obvious?
I don't think she has. Indeed, she said, yeah, we'll support a Palestinian state, Israeli state, so long as Hamas frees the hostages, yeah. which would be a pretty good outcome. But the opposition has actually also tonight, earlier tonight, ramped up its attack. In other words, it's sort of going all in. This is, quote, the most reckless act of a foreign minister Dutton has seen in 22 years in Parliament. The Albanese government has failed to provide the moral clarity that distinguishes the lawless from the lawful. Apparently, and I'm quoting from Mr. Dutton, the opposition leader, the events at the Sydney Opera House, there was a protest there, were akin to a Port Arthur moment in terms of their social significance. Now, I'm just quoting from the opposition leader tonight. There's unprecedented anti-Semitism that may well be true. And do you know where it starts, Philip? It starts in school. He said there's a danger of a new generation of Israel haters and anti-Semites, pointing to hundreds of children skipping school to attend pro-Palestinian rallies. In classrooms and lecture theatres throughout Australia, young people are being increasingly taught what to think, not how to think, and what we need is a societal-wide effort which starts on teaching the basics, and the coalition is committed to a reprioritisation of reading, writing and maths. Now, this is all linked because we need to ensure our students have a better grasp of the horrors of the Holocaust, as well as the age-old, enduring and shape-shifting nature of anti-Semitism. So the opposition and Australians have had a gutful of the politics of division. This two-state solution would be part of that, I guess. The opposition is clearly going out on one limb.
They're going out quite far on one limb here, aren't they? In a situation where the, as I said at the beginning, world opinion has shifted here, and the horror in Gaza has been so confronting to people that Israel's lost some authority in this debate, haven't they?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess Dutton has, the opposition leader has reasons for doing what he's doing. As you've said, Australia has long supported a two-state solution. Now, it's probably true that Penny Wong has said this, being, as every Australian would be, horrified and unsettled by the murder or accidental killing of an Australian in an attack by Israel, an Australian aid worker. But the opposition's taking one side. I guess it's actually, if you think of about the opposition leader, he can't really work his way through these competition issues, these supermarket issues, because the Nationals have a very strong anti-supermarket view, and so he can't really object to what the government's doing there. Just referring to the kind of things we were talking about before. On this, he tonight, taking it further, he has clearly differentiated, picking one side.
He has. All right, Peter Martin, good to talk, and thanks for your time.
See you next time.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.